Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello and welcome back to Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast dedicated to Central and Eastern Europe and the official podcast of the New Eastern Europe magazine. My name is Adam Reichert, and this is episode 92 of Talk Eastern Europe, a recording during a very difficult time. We are now already 5 days into the war in Ukraine, and this is going to be our main topic today. But before we begin, I do want to introduce my other co-hosts who are here with me. Of course, everyone knows Maciek Mikulski. Hello, Maciek.
Hi, Adam. Hello, everyone.
And joining us is, for the first time ever, our third co-host, Agnieszka Widłaszewska. Hello, Aga. Welcome to Talk Eastern Europe. And maybe let's introduce you to all of our listeners out there.
Hello. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much, Adam. Yes, and hello, listeners. I'm very excited that I finally get to speak to you and hopefully in the future also hear back from you. My name is Agnieszka Widłaszewska. As Adam said, I am originally Polish from Warsaw. I lived there for most of my life, but I moved away when I went to university. I studied first at UCL in London and then at the College of Europe in Natalin. So that's Warsaw as well. And my interests and my sort of university education, I've always focused on European studies, but also later on specifically on European neighborhood policy and even more specifically, I'm very much interested in Eastern Partnership countries and Russia. I lived in Russia for a year as well. I traveled a bit around the region, so I try to follow it as closely as possible. And of course, these days, we do follow it very closely, all of us, I think. So it's on the one hand, it's a very interesting time to join the podcast for somebody with my interests. But it's, of course, also a very difficult time. But sure, we'll manage together somehow. And for the past couple of years, I've been working in Luxembourg at the European Court of Auditors. I should probably mention now that nothing I say on this podcast in any way represents the views of the European Court of Auditors, just in case. And actually, soon I'll be moving to Brussels to work for the European Commission. But my views also do not represent the views of the European Commission. So I'm just here in my humble capacity as Agnieszka.
I think maybe our listeners would be interested to hear how did you end up being our third co-host?
Yeah, I think it's quite a nice little story, and I think we all need some nice stories these days. So just very briefly, it was, as many things in life, a very random sequence of events. It started with my friend Grzegorz, shout out to Grzegorz if he's listening, inviting me to an event that he organized with Adam as a guest speaker. And the event was dedicated to the 10th anniversary of New Eastern Europe. So I decided to come. I think he invited me the day before, but I had nothing to do because when you live in Luxembourg, you normally don't have much to do. So I decided to join. And I think during the Q&A session, I just sort of asked you, Adam, a question as to what are the future plans for New Eastern Europe as a whole. And you just happened to mention the podcast. You knew that I was a patron of the podcast. Shout out to all the patrons. I'm one of you. And you mentioned that you were potentially considering having some new people on the show. I think it's one of those moments, you know, you just sort of decide to go for it. I didn't have much podcasting experience, but I was really keen. So I thought, hey, I'll just message Adam and see how it goes. So I just messaged you saying that, hello, it's me. I'm very keen in case you're looking for anybody. I'm here. I follow you. I follow the regions. I'm really interested, and hyped to get involved. And so, yeah, eventually you guys got back to me saying that you were interested. So I guess the moral of the story is, if anybody is willing to get involved in anything really in life, just go up to the people that are doing this thing that you want to get involved in and ask them if you can join, and you never know.
Yeah, definitely. Right place at the right time. We, Maciek and I, have been talking about expanding the podcast. We are definitely in need of additional help. So we're really grateful, Agnieszka, that you joined us on Talk Eastern Europe. And Aga's already been doing some work for us, so it kind of behind the scenes. But this is her first official joining of the podcast as a co-host. So we're really pleased to have you here. And welcome aboard.
One quite funny thing is that 1 year and a half ago, Adam was quite reluctant to have more people on board. Sorry, Adam, for saying that, but it was quite interesting also to see how our project has changed over time, and how we started to think how we can develop it. So this is a huge change and great change for us. Agnieszka, welcome on board. It probably means that there will be less Adam's and Maciek's talking, which is probably good for the listeners. I think from now on we can get started.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So, okay, let's get now into our main topic, which is unfortunately not one that we are, you know, positive about. Is a very depressing topic, and this is a very serious topic. It's the situation in Ukraine, Russia's aggression against Ukraine, the war in Ukraine. We are recording this on Monday afternoon of February 28th. A lot of things have been moving very quickly. A lot of things have changed quite dynamically on the ground, but I think it's already possible to offer a few reflections on the situation, and I would like us today... we do not have any special guests. I think what we would like to do for you is just kind of provide some of our overall assessment of the situation, as well as some reflections that we have about the situation and where it might go next. But of course, no one really knows for sure. I just want to start by saying that I will admit that I never believed that this invasion would take place up until the day that it happened. I was in touch, and still am, thankfully, in touch with a lot of people who are in Ukraine, mostly in Kiev, but not only, as well in Kharkiv and Odessa and Lviv. I would say that general assessment between all of us, you know, we had a lot of discussions before it happened, was that, okay, this intelligence that the U.S. has, we don't know if it's real. It could be also a Russian, trick to scare, like a scare tactic. The building up of forces could definitely, we thought, was a scare tactic to kind of destabilize Ukraine internally, but also to put pressure on Ukraine and the West to kind of give in to the demands that were being made out of the Kremlin. And we can talk a little bit more about that later. But we've already been talking about those leading up to this moment. And it was just, for me, unimaginable what has started to take place on the Thursday morning, February 24th, when we saw the invasion start, and particularly the missiles and the troops moving in. And I think, just from my perspective, and I'm really interested to hear Maciek and Aga to hear your your reflections as well. But I personally believe that the Kremlin and Putin in particular have completely underestimated the Ukrainian resilience. They did not expect the defense forces to put up the fight that they are. This seems to be kind of one of the main headlines that is coming out of the war at the moment. All indications that we see now is that Russia believed that this would be a quick operation, that their primary targets was largely Kiev, even though the entire justification to go to war was to assist in the east, which we, you know, most of the fighting is actually taking place rather in the north or around Kiev. And their aim was to take up Zelensky and try to impose some sort of new regime or new leader or install some sort of pro-Russian leader in Ukraine that would kind of bring Ukraine back to the Russian sphere of influence. It's been 4 days now, going, 4.5. The Russians still have not taken Kiev. The invasion force has been stopped in most directions. And we are seeing that right now that the Russians have not achieved their goal. So, you know, one of the big questions I think we'll be asking for the next days or weeks, you know, is how this will end. We already are seeing indications in Kharkiv that the Russians are going to probably change their tactic and start to use even more powerful weapons, including cluster bombs. And we've seen some residential areas in Kharkiv being bombed by cluster bombs. And this is very, very concerning. We know that, you know, these are really big cities with big population centers, and the people do not deserve to be in such a situation. So that's kind of my first reflections. You know, when the invasion started, already in New Eastern Europe, I can just say this right away. Already in New Eastern Europe, we began to compile a list of all the important resources on how we can help Ukraine and Ukrainians. And there are a lot of things we can do, you know, including giving donations directly to Ukrainian organizations, as well as to humanitarian organizations who are providing aid to Ukrainians and to Ukraine. And assisting those organizations which are assisting refugees which are now fleeing. And I spent last weekend on the border. We can talk about that in a moment. But before we move on, I do just want to offer both of you an opportunity to give your reflections on the situation.
Thanks. I think I can definitely relate to everything, pretty much, Adam, that you're saying. I think there has been just this sense of shock and disbelief that something like that can happen, especially in 21st century Europe. And I think it's just something that hit us all, and we will probably spend a lot of time dealing with the fact itself that it happened, and of course with the consequences that we are not yet fully aware of. But indeed, you could see, I think, that the first and the second day of the invasion were quite overwhelming, right? A lot of the news that was coming in was quite negative. I myself as well, I have friends who are in Ukraine. Some of them are in Kyiv specifically. Some of them are in Lviv. They have families all over Ukraine, of course. So it was just a lot of anxiety and a lot of worrying about everybody. But I think at least over the past few days, the feeling really has changed overall. I think the overall atmosphere is somewhat more positive. There is this hope. There is this motivation within, of course, first of all, the Ukrainian nation, the Ukrainian army, but also in the international community. I think the international community really stepped up its reaction in recent days. In the beginning, it was maybe not so visible, but now it certainly is. Of course, we don't know how it's going to continue. There's, I believe, still negotiations ongoing as we speak between Ukrainian and Russian delegations. I think there's a lot of lessons to be drawn, and I think we will spend many weeks, months, and probably years analyzing and talking about what has happened, why it has happened, how come we as just international community allowed things to get this far, but also it will really take us some time to understand why this has happened, what are the lessons that can be drawn. I think for now, all we can do is, as you mentioned, Adam, first of all, try and support Ukraine and Ukrainians as much as we can in the ways that we can. Well, our job here, I guess, is also to just keep people updated, try and spread information, good quality information. That's also very important, reliable information, and see what comes next.
Well, one thing is certain is that the world that we are in now is completely different than it was even a week ago. And then the response that has taken place from the West, I mean, over the weekend was quite, inspiring, I think, you know, also to the Ukrainians who are there fighting, that they see that there is support on their side. And we'll probably get into that. But Maciek, your thoughts since last Thursday?
Yeah, before we started this recording, I was in touch with my friend who is based in Kyiv. His name is Maxim Kiyak, and maybe our regular listeners remember Maxim from previous episodes on Ukraine. He's an expert in international relations, in politics. He holds PhD in political science. And you know, he told me that he subscribed to territorial defense, and that's he thinks that that's something what every man in Ukraine should do right now. So he also told me that, you know, the sound of sirens, these alarms in the city, became really familiar to him. Like, he got used to that. He also told
me he's in Kyiv. Yeah, yes, he's in Kyiv.
Yes. Another thing, he just told me that, you know, there were reported deaths of 16 children already in Ukraine. So this is, you know, the most cruel dimension of all this of this situation, and you know, you cannot say that it's not personal also for you. Yeah, it's one thing is to read all these headlines in international media, but the another thing is to, you know, just hear that from your friend, yeah, who is there, and I know you also have a lot of friends there, so. So yeah, we are trying to deal with this situation, but we of course remember that the situation of Ukrainians out there is much harder than ours. And I agree with what Agnieszka has just said, that from now on we think that our mission, our aim is to provide information, reliable information about the situation, and we will try to do everything what we can just to spread and share information, how international community, how just people can help Ukraine in this fight. Because as my friend Maxim told me also today, it's not only Ukrainians fight. Yeah, they do not only fight for their freedom. It's also the fight in, you know, defense European values to defend the better world we knew, and now it's at stake and it's in danger. Yeah, so that's I think some initial thoughts from me.
I mean, certainly. You're right that this is not just, I mean, the Ukrainians are the ones who are fighting, but they are fighting for everybody, you know. And this is, I think, one of the key messages that we keep hearing and keep witnessing and seeing. But this doesn't mean that we have to sit back and do nothing. And as I mentioned, we have a lot of resources that are available to you can access and help. And I just will mention that we do have a special page on the New Eastern Europe website, and I will include a link in the notes here to this podcast. But we have, you know, a lot of organizations which are based in Ukraine, especially the special account. This is the one that's probably been going around the most on the internet, but a special account for raising funds for the Ukraine's armed forces. And there are different currencies you can transfer funding, but there are also different organizations which are purchasing medical supplies, military supplies, bulletproof vests, and so you can go through the whole list. But in addition, we also have a ton of organizations, and we keep compiling, we keep getting new ones, so the list keeps updating. So I definitely recommend that you come back as much as possible and check We have organizations there that are working with refugees. Very important one is Vostok SOS, which is working on evacuating people from the east. But now that was their original mission, but now they're working throughout the whole country. A lot of Polish organizations which are providing aid, particularly on the border, but also just helping with the refugee situation. But I also added, we also added, and this was, I think, important to note, you know, the border with Ukraine, where people are fleeing, is not only in Poland, they are also escaping to Romania, to Hungary, and to Moldova. And we managed to track down a few groups that are in, for example, Romania or Moldova. In particular, Moldova's infrastructure and civil society, while it's very important, probably is underfunded. So I would also suggest taking a look at supporting some of the refugee efforts and humanitarian efforts that are being organized in these countries, which do need this support. So any donation to any of these organizations, I think, is really critical. And this is how we can play a role in supporting Ukraine and the Ukrainians. As I mentioned before, the Western responses, particularly what we've seen over the weekend, showed, I think, probably is another aspect that Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin were not expecting, is this incredibly united response from the West, from Western countries, and some reversals on positions, particularly Germany, which has not only reversed its position on SWIFT, has now also announced it will supply Ukraine with defensive weapons. Maciek, I'm curious your response on the sanctions and the Western response to the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, the list of sanctions is already quite long, I would say. I think I will, you know, only touch upon some issues, and I will, you know, talk about the West response to the situation,
sure.
Not only about sanctions,
sure.
But as you said, probably on the top of the list of, you know, Ukraine's demands, what the US should do was, you know, to cut off Russia's banks from the SWIFT network. And maybe just to briefly explain, SWIFT is an international system that banks use to securely send and receive money. And it is the most common financial system of this kind in the world. So it will definitely hurt Russia's economy. But I think we should also underline that not all Russia's banks will be cut off from SWIFT. This is what I've got from, you know, from media reports. But so therefore we don't know for sure how severe or how, you know, how hard it will be for Russia. So I think we have to wait until, you know, it will be introduced, because probably it is introducing right now, or it will be introduced really soon. But I think that part of the problem that not all of Russia's banks will be cut off from the network is related to the fact that, you know, still a lot of countries buy Russia's oil and gas, and, you know, you have to pay for it. So therefore, you cannot exclude all Russia's banks from the network. So I'm not sure really how effective it will be. But there are other interesting developments in this regard. And I think, as you just mentioned, the EU decided to finance the purchase and delivery of weapons and other equipment to Ukraine. And Ursula von der Leyen said it is a watershed moment in the history of the European Union. And I think it is, because, you know, we have no such situation in history. And this is a huge change for the bloc. And as for the numbers, what I've learned, it will be the support worth around 450 million euros of EU funds on weapons for Ukraine, plus 50 million euros on items such as, you know, medical supplies and so on. And what is more, it is somehow accompanied by Germany's decision to raise military spending to over 2% of the country's GDP, starting already from this year. And Germany will also send weapons to Ukraine, including Stinger surface-to-air missiles. And also, Germany decided to, you know, to really reform country's energy policy and makes it less Russian dependent. So I would call it, this is all like tectonic change for Europe, for the European Union. And yeah, imagine that we have this conversation 1 week ago. You would say that all of these things are impossible to happen, that it won't happen, no chance. Yeah. And now we are observing it and it's happening. So I think in further episodes, we will try, you know, to go into details of all these issues, because I think every aspect opens a huge discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even including what you've already said, the EU is buying from, I believe, Poland and Slovakia, and maybe others, their fighter jets to give to Ukraine, because the fighter jets to Poland, we still have here several MiGs. I'm not an expert on military equipment, but the MiG jets, which are you know, Russian made.
Yes.
The Ukrainian pilots know how to fly.
What I understand, Ukraine asked for it because, as you said, so Ukrainian pilots do not training to use these jets. Yeah. But one more thing I forgot to mention, and this is another component of the EU sanction, is to ban Russia's state-owned television, Russia Today, and Sputnik News Agency. And I think this decision comes, you know, a few years late, but it finally materializes. So it is another, you know, component of this huge change in the mindset, yeah, you know, of the West, of the European Union. And it's, you know, something new has started, and I think that's quite unexpected development for Russia. But regarding this economic sanction, Adam, I would slightly disagree with you when you said that Russia did not expect that, because I think Russia had prepared a plan for it. Yeah, so they, I think they took at least in some way, to some extent, that the economic sanction might be severe for them, and they really prepared a huge financial reserves before the war. And also today, what we have seen in the early in the morning, the Russia's national bank decided to raise interest rates by 11.5 percentage points up to 20%.
Yeah.
So it was immediate response. I think they were prepared for that. They had a plan what to do. Yeah, but it is I think, you know, now everything depends on how long it will be. Yeah. Because for sure Russia cannot continue in that way for a very long time, but they are prepared for at least, you know, short to mid perspective.
Agnieszka, you're close to Brussels. You're in Luxembourg, which, by the way, I read today is also providing defensive weapons to Ukraine, which is probably also unprecedented in Luxembourg's history. But I'm curious on your reactions also on how the EU in particular has responded to the situation in Ukraine. There's a lot of movement now to even provide Ukraine with EU membership. I'm not sure how that would work technically, but I think this is, again, something to boost morale. But curious on also your thoughts on EU response.
It's all very, I think, it's very interesting to observe how the EU has changed in a way its attitude from, you know, there's this running joke on the internet, right? Like the EU is always concerned. Like that's the regular response. The EU is either just concerned or seriously concerned, different variations. Different variations on that. But I think it has shown already several times, not in this type of scenario, but it has shown that when there is really a big crisis, that's when things happen very quickly. That's when all of a sudden the 27 members can really get together and agree on unprecedented steps very quickly. And this is definitely showing now as well. So we started, I remember, I think on Thursday, first day of the invasion, we started with the sort of regular sanctions, which were, oh, we're going to freeze the assets of however many people, we're going to add somebody to the sanctions list, which I think was definitely not enough. And I think the morning after, when President Zelensky was delivering his morning speech, he did point out, I think he did try to sort of quip a little bit at the EU and other actors that they are not doing enough. But since then, we really have seen a number of quite remarkable steps that Maciek has already listed. I think it's also worth noting that it's not just the EU, but also individual member states are doing things, are sending different types of equipment, weapons, other types of support. Of course, there's countries that are bordering Ukraine that are providing a lot of humanitarian aid. And I don't know if you mentioned, Maciek, but of course, I think this is the news from yesterday that the EU closed its airspace to Russian planes.
This is huge. True. Yeah.
Yes.
And what's more, it's is a ban for all type of aircraft. So in that, I think the decision includes also private jets of oligarchs, which is quite
too bad.
Symbolic.
Too bad.
Can't get to their villas.
Yes, I think I saw that Foreign Minister Lavrov also cancelled his trip to Geneva because there was just no way for him to fly there.
Yeah. Even Switzerland, I think, also closed its airspace, which for a neutral country is, I think, quite a development.
It looks quite interesting if you open now any flight radar app or something like that, and you can see, you know, the crowded sky over the European Union, but empty space, you know, when you look at Belarus and Russia. I think we forgot to mention one thing, that, you know, that the closest distance from the border to Kiev is from Belarus, exactly. And and, you know, and Belarus, no matter what Lukashenko says, joined Russia as an aggressor. Yeah, and I think we should also underline that Belarus and the Belarusian regime, maybe let's put it that way, is equally responsible for all war crimes and for all, you know, sufferings that are taking place right now in Ukraine.
There are rumors that even Belarusian soldiers, you know, will join in the invasion to the force. Right now, for the moment, I think it's just the territory has been used to, you know, launch the invasion, as well as several missile strikes, which is, of course, terrible. So, Maciek, you're absolutely right. Aga, you mentioned Zelensky's speeches that he gives daily, which have become, I mean, have become a, he himself, Zelensky, has become a symbol of bravery, of heroism. We all know that he is probably the number one target that the Kremlin wants to take out. And he has not fled. You know, he was given many opportunities to flee, and he hasn't. He is there fighting, and he is showing his face. And this is, I mean, this is, no one ever thought that a comedian turned president would become probably, you know, the greatest hero of a generation, if not, you know, if not more. So I'm curious, and also on your thoughts. You've been following his speeches and his actions. So what do you think about Zelensky's President Zelensky's role in this whole situation?
I will get to Zelensky in a second. I just wanted to come back for a second because you did mention the EU membership.
Yes, that's right.
And I didn't sort of react to that. I think. I would agree that at this point it's largely symbolic. Let's face it, it's not just a matter of signing a piece of paper. There's a lot behind joining in the EU, and it's a long process either way. Even if you want to do it very quickly, so I think it's more about perhaps getting an official declaration, right? Because before, the actual membership was never on the table for Ukraine or for other Eastern Partnership countries. So far, the actual membership is only on the table for Western Balkan countries and Turkey, but let's not delve into that. And not all of them. we'll have another episode on that.
Yeah, that's for other episodes.
So I think even, let's say, an open declaration from all leaders of the EU saying, yes, we give...
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ukraine, sort of a membership perspective, or we give a specific timeline when we think Ukraine can join. That would already be a huge step. Although I'm still quite skeptical. I don't think we're at that level of unity in terms of future EU memberships. But there has been these declarations, right? Poland has openly said that it wants Ukraine in the EU. Let's see if other countries follow suit. But I think it's interesting that this discussion has started. And yeah, on Zelensky and his speeches, I mean, I think we've all seen a lot of articles on that. And we've probably also watched at least a couple of these speeches. I think he tries to do them quite regularly. I think he does at least one per day, sort of in the morning, to conclude the events of the night and the previous day, and to sort of start a new day, motivating the people and the army, of course. And I think it's... it is really remarkable how quickly his risen in a way in terms of popularity. I did check before our recording his ratings before the war in recent months. They've been oscillating around 25%, max 30% in terms of support. Today, I think it was Kyiv Independent that published. I think it was actually they published, but it was done. The survey was done by Rating, the group called Rating, and the percentage was 90%, 91% of support for Zelensky. So it is a really quite remarkable. And I think when you listen to his speeches, you can definitely see that, first of all, somebody is writing them very well. I doubt he is the one who writes the entire thing, but whoever writes them really tries to strike the right balance between presenting the situation, which is still quite dire, which is still quite difficult, but then switching to more positive elements, right? Talking about support, talking about the bravery of the soldiers, the people, and then also throwing in some personal elements that where Zelensky talks about himself, his family, you know, his experience. And I think that's it's brilliantly done. And in terms of the way he delivers it, I think somebody mentioned to me, and I think that's a very interesting observation. People are making fun of the fact that he used to be a comic, a comedian, that he used to be an actor. But that actually might help him a lot in terms of delivering these speeches, because I'm not saying that in a sense that he's pretending anything, but it is an extraordinary situation to be delivering war speeches, right, to the nation. This is not something that most leaders face ever, right? So it's more of the kind of scene that we see in a movie or in a TV series. It's a very particular type of contact with your citizens. And I think in a way his experience as an actor might help him in terms of, you know, the way he speaks, his posture, his gestures, because he really needs to inspire, right? He needs to lead this nation into battle against a nuclear superpower, which is, you know, as daunting as it gets, and he's doing it brilliantly, and it's been working miracles. So I think in that sense, paradoxically, it's maybe good that he used to be a comedian and an actor. I think also those brief videos that he records in the city, right, to show that he's there. I think he's really showing that, if you excuse the pun, he is the servant of the people. I mean, he has stayed, he is there. And I think it contrasts as well a lot. Maybe we'll get to talk about it with Putin and the way he is represented as a leader or he presents himself as a leader. I think it's like two completely different styles. But I think it's definitely worth listening to Zelensky's speeches. If anybody hasn't had a chance, they are on YouTube. So a lot of them, I think now all of them are translated. Well, they have subtitles in English as well. So do give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, if we compare the speech that Putin gave on Monday a week ago, which was his kind of long, 45 minutes or an hour speech that was, you know, almost ramblings. Sounded almost like ramblings of a madman, and he was getting angry, and it was, shocking to watch. I'm sure a lot of you out there have probably watched it or heard about it. I was watching it live, and just to see it happening, I was just like getting in more and more. And that was maybe when it started to become more real that this was what he's going to do. But then when you compare, like you said, when you compare the two styles, I mean, you have Zelensky who is like, he's inspiring his people to defend, you know, and I think, you know, the first speech he gave where he said that when you come to, you know, when you come to Ukraine, you will not face us in our backs. We will face you with our faces, you know, that we will stand our ground and we will defend. I think, you know, this inspired the Ukrainian population as well, which is always, it has always been mobilized, you know, and motivated to defend itself. And this is, and I think we are seeing it playing out here.
The Rzeczpospolita, the biggest daily in Poland, has today Zelensky on the front page with a title Hero. That also says something about, you know, the international impact he has today.
Yeah. Yeah, and the last, I guess, topic, which is, you know, another main story of this terrible, terrible situation, is the humanitarian disaster that is unfolding, not only inside Ukraine, as civilians are, you know, hiding and trying to avoid the violence, but also a lot of them are escaping and fleeing to the neighboring countries, which will take them in. And this is, you know, the countries which border Ukraine on the west and south. So, you know, Poland, which is probably the largest land border for refugees, but there's also Romania, Moldova, Hungary as well. I spent this past Saturday at the Polish border crossing of Medyka, which is and the one of the largest border crossings, I guess, between Poland and Ukraine. And I had an opportunity to see the situation. We took some photos there, so I will send a link to my photo report that we did in the notes to this podcast. But just briefly, to some reflections that I have is that there are tons of volunteers. I mean, the Polish outpour of volunteers and people willing to help was just amazing to see. And I do have to say that not everybody who showed up to help were just Poles. There were also Ukrainians, because I think, you know, it's important to remember that before the war started here in Poland, the Ukrainian population, some estimates say between almost 1 million or 1.5 million Ukrainians already living here in Poland. So a lot of them came to help the situation at the border. There was a lot of, you know, food, warm meals were prepared, you know, sweets were ready for kids who were crossing the border. People have donated clothes, shoes, blankets, tons of water, coffee and tea. And then, of course, you know, the big challenge is the logistics and how to coordinate everything and how to get these people on their way to somewhere else, because you do not want to have the crowds staying in that area. It's cold, you know, the evening it gets below zero. And so there was a lot of transports that were being organized by the Polish Fire Brigade, which is a national agency. But then there were plenty of people who just showed up with signs that said, hey, I have a car and you know, two spaces at my home. And, you know, if you needed a ride and a place to stay, you can come to my place. And that was quite interesting to see. And we then went to Przemysl, which is the train station, basically next to Medyka. So it's like the main border crossing for trains. A very similar situation. Lots of people, lots of volunteers. Of course, lots of refugees, and getting them the help, I think was being managed quite well from what I could see. That was very positive to see the total support that Polish society, and we see on internet and online, you know, the amount of the different types of fundraisers and groups, Facebook groups that are collecting goods and bringing them to the border or getting them ready for people who are coming here. It's quite immense and it's quite inspiring to see as well.
So Adam, just to add some numbers to provide a bit of a context to what you have already said, according to today's report by the Polish Border Guard, close to 300,000 people have been admitted to Poland since the beginning of the invasion. And as you said, the number of Ukrainians in Poland before the invasion could be estimated at around 1,300,000 of people, which means that within those last few days, 20% of this number, you know, number of people have entered Poland, which is really huge in influx of people. And one more thing, only on February 27, in the last Sunday, it was 100,000 people who entered Poland. And if you like to compare it to other countries of the region, I ask some fellow analysts who are looking at Romania and Moldova, and they told me that in Romania, this is around 37,000 of people, and in Moldova, 50,000 of people. So, and the numbers for Slovakia are way lower. So Poland is, in fact, you know, the main direction right now for Ukrainians. What is interesting regarding Romania, that more than a half of people who enter the country have already left Romania, so it was not, you know, a destination for most of the people, and less than 1,000 of people ask for asylum. So this is also quite interesting. Yeah, where those people will finally go. But I think for Poland, the story might be slightly different, especially because the diaspora, Ukrainian diaspora in Poland, is already quite large. So I think, this is my guess, that a lot of people will simply join somehow those people who are already in Poland. But I can also imagine that that some of Ukrainians will continue their journey to Germany, for instance. But yeah, we can wait and see what happens next in this regard.
Yeah, and I mean, we know from the reports of the people that we spoke with at the border that the lines, I mean, we didn't see mass wave of people coming in. It was, you know, small groups or just, you know, people coming, trickling in. So we know that on the other side of the border, on the Ukrainian side, is where really is a lot of the where there's a really long wait in order to get to Poland. And part of the reason has to do with the Ukrainian border guards, from what I understand, are checking to make sure that no men ages 18 to 60 are leaving the country because they have full mobilization. But also just that the processing and everything is just very slow.
Yeah, I have heard that you have to spend at least several hours on the Ukrainian side to cross the border.
I heard Maciek, actually several days, to be honest.
Days, okay.
Yeah, days. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were saying, and maybe it's different, you know, maybe they've opened it up now, but when we were there, that some of the people were saying that they expect, they knew some people who had just joined the line, which was around 20 kilometers long or so, if not longer, that they were expecting 3 days minimum wait time.
Yeah, probably it also depends on the border crossing. Yeah.
Yes. So Medica, the one at Medica is, I think, probably the largest, where it has the largest group of people. And so the big challenge is also the volunteers on the Polish side want to just be allowed to cross and deliver food and water and supplies. And this is logistically very challenging, but I think they are currently working on negotiating with the Ukrainian border guard how to do that, how to allow these people to just deliver these supplies to people as they're waiting.
As far as I know, the procedure at the Polish side has been adjusted. It is simpler than it was in the past. So there are some extra circumstances now in place, which is very good development. One more aspect here, I think, is worth mentioning. is that the on the Polish side, there is also, you know, maybe not a line or not that huge amount of people crossing, you know, the border towards Ukraine, but
yes,
there are also men coming from Poland, I mean, Ukrainian citizens crossing the border who are going to Ukraine because they want to join the army or the resistance, simply.
Yeah, we met some people who were standing in line, and we asked them, are you returning home? And they said yes. We said to fight, to go to war, and they said yes. And that was actually also an opportunity. Anybody who's crossing into Ukraine, the volunteers on the Polish side would give them bags of supplies, actually, to hand out to the people that are waiting on the other side. For the moment, that's the only way to get supplies to those people.
Yeah, and one more thing that I've learned actually from your photo story you already mentioned, or maybe from another article on the New Eastern Europe website, which is, I think, important, that, you know, there are still... Despite the fact that the amount of help is huge, it is still needed. And I think we have to remember that it can be, you know, this whole helping industry can be very exhausting experience for volunteers. So I think we should remember that if anyone has time and energy to help, I think it is needed, especially during nights, yeah? Because probably more people can help during the day, but trains, you know, transport by cars is happening all the time. So people also cross the border during night. Yeah, and I think we shouldn't forget that it's, you know, that is a long process. Yeah, so this help will be needed for a long time.
And one really important aspect, which I think we also should look at, is the reaction of the Russian society itself, because, you know, the Russian people, I think, at least I have the impression, are not, you know, behind this war in the way that probably, you know, the Kremlin would want. And we've seen huge protests breaking out in the big cities, particularly Moscow and St. Petersburg, and people taking serious risks because it's, you know, not legal to protest. Agnieszka, you said you lived even in Russia for some time, studying in Russia for some time. I'm curious on your reactions to what you see coming out of Russia and the brave Russians who are risking themselves to protest this war.
Yeah, I did live in Russia. It was in 2015, 2016. So it was actually after the annexation of Crimea and after the war in Donbas. But it was sort of sufficiently long after that there was not that much going on in terms of protests at that point. But I think here we definitely see that there is still a big group of people willing to get out there and protest, which is impressive if we think about the mass protest from last year after the return of Alexei Navalny and the crackdown at that point. Those were very big for Russia, at least large-scale protests, but the response was extremely brutal. And I think the hope from the Kremlin was that this time there's pretty much going to be no response, because people will know that essentially when you go to the protests, the chances of you getting arrested are very high. The ratio of arrested people to the overall number of protesters is very high in Russia. So I think it's, of course, difficult to get specific numbers as to how many people participated in the current protests. But when we look at the number of arrested people, we can at least make some estimations. And I've been checking with the OVD Info, which normally tries to provide statistics and also information on specific people who are arrested so that their families can try and find them and locate them. And the two sort of biggest days in terms of protests were Thursday and Sunday, at least if we look at the number of cities and the number of arrested people. On Thursday, that was about 2,000 arrested in 67 cities. And then yesterday, on Sunday, it was almost 3,000 people arrested in almost 60 cities. So you can see that there is still people willing to get out there. But unfortunately, I don't think it's anywhere near what it would need to be for the Kremlin to react in any way other than just sending the police and arresting as many people as they can. But I think it's still important to talk about this so that we don't end up with this impression that the whole of Russian nation is either against Ukraine or just doesn't care at all. I think there's a lot of people there that care. It's just that it's simply that there has been this campaign of cracking down on protests for such a long time that not as many of them are ready or willing or able to protest. But I think we also saw a lot of other types of initiatives, open letters, petitions from journalists, from the scientific community, from actors, cinematographers. So there's really all across the board, there are groups of people that are trying to voice their opposition towards this war in sport as well, among celebrities. So there are attempts, and I think it's still good that they are there, especially that some of these people might be able to reach the kind of Russian population that independent media or international media is never going to reach. So perhaps if they hear about this war from their favorite actor or from some kind of other celebrity or a footballer, maybe this will somehow help to spread the word at least, because we are currently in a situation where a lot of people in Russia have no clue what is happening, mm-hmm. right? So I think it's still important.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, how many families are affected by it, because they're, you know, a lot of these young kids from Russia are sent to fight. I have a sense from, you know, just the reports that I see and what people are sharing on social media, that a lot of these soldiers, you know, who are young conscripts, they don't even know that they were sent into Ukraine. They thought they were, you know, sent on some sort of military exercises. And the Russian troop losses, according to the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense, so, you know, we have to take it with a grain of salt, because we don't know if these numbers are really confirmed or not. But they have said today, and this is Monday, that 5,300 Russian soldiers have lost their lives in the war already. That's a lot. You know, a lot of people will be affected by this in Russia. And I imagine that the mood to support war wasn't there to begin with. And as more people die from the Russian side, it's only going to get worse. So there's going to be a lot of social pressure. Of course, Putin doesn't listen very much to these kind of things, unfortunately, but maybe others around him will, and there will be some sort of action taken.
And I think the last remark I wanted to do, just because today some sort of negotiations between two sides were organized in Belarus, actually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But before we start recording, I have not found any report. So I assume that, you know, the negotiations are still taking place, and we have to wait if it will bring some sort of effect. As far as I know, the representation of Ukraine is quite high rank, but not sure if it's the moment in which Russia would like, you know, to end this war in that way. Yeah.
Best case scenario is that Russia admits it made a mistake and withdraws, but I don't think it's, like you said, Maciek, I don't think it's not willing to make such a admission. So I'm really difficult. It's really difficult for me to imagine how such negotiations would take place, what kind of room there is for compromise or finding a decision. But maybe there will be, you know, maybe there will be at least an opportunity to end hostilities and at least start at that point, because right now people are dying in Ukraine, and that is the fact, that is the reality.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So the last thing I want to say, and then we'll move into our final part of the podcast, is that, you know, as I've been saying already throughout, we need to support Ukraine. We need to do everything we can to support Ukrainians. And we also have a petition. I forgot to mention this earlier on. We have a petition which is a call to action for anybody who's out there. So every one of our listeners, if you would like, please, I'm asking you to please sign our petition. I will link to it in the podcast notes. And the last thing, which I have not announced earlier, so this is actually the first time I'm saying it now, but I'm sure we'll have it announced by the time this is released, is that we did a special Spotify playlist of Ukrainian music that we suggest for everyone to listen to. And these are some really great songs. Ukraine culture is so rich and so deep, you know, something that, again, Vladimir Putin doesn't even believe exists, but we are going to prove him wrong. And I strongly recommend you listen to our podcast playlist, which is called Hear Ukraine. And I'll link to it as well to the podcast notes. Okay, so maybe now we move into the final part of our episode. This is already, we've already gone on quite a bit about this really, really important topic. And I do believe that we will probably be covering this topic primarily for the next couple of weeks, but we will try to look at it from different aspects. But we cannot forget about the very important support that we receive from our patrons and the Patreon community that we have started to build around the podcast. And we're really grateful for their support. And one of the things that we have started to do this year for our patrons is to include more exclusive content, which is exclusive audio, among other things. I recently had a conversation with Serhiy Plokhy from the Harvard University Ukrainian Research Center. Very interesting backgrounder on history and how Russia and Putin in particular sees Ukraine. Very important for the context of the situation. And Maciek, you had also recently, I think most recently, a discussion about the situation in Ukraine as well. Maybe you can want to say a few words about that.
Yes, I had an interview with Givi Gigitashvili, who is a researcher at the Atlantic Council. And indeed, it is about Ukraine and situation over there. But I have to underline that we recorded it right before the invasion. It was on Wednesday, and we discussed the issue of the recognition of the so-called separatist republics, Donetsk and Luhansk separatist republics by Putin. And you know, now of course it's the situation is totally different, but it for those who are interested, it gives a certain of a context of the whole situation, because from today's perspective, we can say that this recognition was like the first step or the beginning of an invasion. Yeah. So as you said, this interview is available for our patrons.
Yeah. It's very interesting, and I highly recommend it. So if our patrons want to listen to it, they can log into their Patreon account. And if you out there would like to listen to it, you can become a patron and listen to it as well. And of course, the final benefit and most important benefit that we offer to our patrons is our traditional shout out to our patrons. And since Agnieszka, you are new, our brand new co-host, which has just joined us here on this first episode for you, I would like to offer you the honor and pleasure of doing the patron shout out.
Thank you. And thank you even more so since I used to be a patron of Talk Eastern Europe. So I used to enjoy a lot hearing my name mentioned every week, every episode. So I just wanted to say a big, big thank you to the patrons. I understand why you support this podcast, because it's great. And I hope you continue to support us. We are hoping to bring you a lot of interesting content, a lot of additional perks. So keep an eye out for that. And you're just all fantastic human beings. And I'm so glad that you are here with us. And I just wanted to say hello and thank you to Michael, Anais, Georgia, Stephen, Tom, PM, Olaf, CB, Klaus, Plamen, Sean, Naomi, JP, Elise, Sean, David, Pavel, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Wilhelm, David, Erica, Janos, Jason, Mark, Stephanie, and Pierre.
Thank you so much for your support. It really does mean a lot to us, and it really does help us develop this podcast. And I think a lot of the things we've been doing since the beginning of the year show that we are continuing to develop it. Of course, the addition of Agnieszka as well shows that we are developing it. And that is, I think, all we had prepared today. Very important discussion. Please stay tuned for more on this, and stay tuned for future developments. We will be covering them as much as we can. We will be trying to provide as much reliable information, reliable analysis as well. So thank you for everyone who has been listening to us here at Talk Eastern Europe.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.